Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to another show of Investing Simplified. We're sorry for the delay there. Hopefully, you stuck around to listen to the show. And we do apologize for that short delay there in getting the show kicked off. Well, it's another beautiful Saturday morning here in Portland, Oregon. I think once the clouds get away, I think we're going to have a great show and a great day. Listen, my name is Chuck Price, financial advisor, wealth manager with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. And in the studio, I have with me today my co-host, Carl Jepson with the Warren Island Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck. This is it's going to be a nice day.
It's going to be a nice day. And our usual partner here on the show is Kevin Stege, and he's with the Baker Colson CPA firm, and of course, he's burning the midnight oil doing taxes.
Yeah, I think he was getting pretty tired last week, so I'm sure that he's coming down the stretch, though. I think he's going to start getting into his kick. You know, he's a marathon runner, so he's past the wall, and he's headed for the finish.
That's right. He's on the downside. Well, listen, this show is interactive, and we appreciate getting calls from you and questions from you, and we really appreciate that, because you can reach us toll-free at 800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. And of course, locally, you can reach us at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. And if you call in and ask a question, we're gonna give you a free copy, since in honor of next week, we're going to have Harry Dent's partner, who is co-editor of his Survive and Prosper daily newsletter. And if you haven't signed up for that, you need to go to my website. You can sign up for it, or you can go to harrydent.com and sign up for it. But we're going to give away free copies of Harry Dent's book, a brand-new book called The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper in the Great Deflation of 2014 to 2019. So great opportunity to get that book for free. The only thing you have to do is you need to pick it up at my office. I'll give it to you for free. You can come by and pick it up. No obligation. Just come in, give us your name. Pick up the book. So if you want that book, give us a call, ask us a question. Our engineer will take the message, take your information, and then when you come into the office, just pick up the book. Well, listen, I'm going to talk about, and speaking about that, I'm going to kind of go right to a little email bag, and I'm going to save my stock report for a little bit later, because this actually has to do, this actually has to do with the stock report I give. And if you've been listening to our show for years, you know that I tend to give a report that talks about how the market is actually doing. And some people kind of look at that as maybe it's a little negative to them because the economy isn't doing as good as they want it to do. But here's an email question I got. Chuck, why do you always talk about how bad the market has done when everyone knows over time the market comes back? Well, that's true. But however, the reality is the market doesn't always come back for everybody. There's a thing we call drawdown. When you're retired and you invest your money and you have your portfolio all set up and you're going to draw your money out over your lifetime for retirement income, what happens to you when the market takes a hit of 37% like it did in 2007 and 8? That market takes a hit of 37%, and you're drawing 5% out of your portfolio. Well, everybody else might have went down 37. You went down 42. And then you're still sucking money out of that portfolio. Look, if you don't consider drawdown, and you've got 5, years before retirement or you're into retirement and your portfolio does not take into consideration drawdown, you are going to be in serious trouble in a volatile market. That's all there is to it. Now, if you're 30 or 40 years old or 20 years old and you're investing in your 401k, you have to absolutely love volatile markets. Because volatile markets, if you're putting money in your 401k every month, you're dollar cost averaging. And when that market takes a hit, when I was younger, I used to say hallelujah because the market took a hit. I'm putting more money in. I'm buying cheaper and cheaper. That's an advantage when you're young. When you get out there to retirement, it's not an advantage. It's a disadvantage. And if you don't really consider drawdown, I know a lot of people I've talked to of late, when I sit down with them and I go over their retirement plan and I look at where they're at, maybe when they retired or looking at where they're at when they started to retire, a lot of them are just not ahead of the game because their portfolio took 4 or 5 years to get caught up. They're drawing money out of the portfolio. Many of them are still 20 to 30% behind. The reality.
And the difficulty there is that in today's world, people are living substantially longer than they used to. So they may need to rely on that money for a much longer period of time, or their lifestyle will change significantly either way.
Yeah, you know, Carl, and I tell people over and over again, if you don't have a strategy or your advisor doesn't have a strategy, you need to come and sit down with me at least for an hour, do a free financial checkup. Because I'm telling you, you need to be aware. I think we are going to have another market correction. And I think if you're not prepared for that market correction, you cannot afford, if you're retired and you've got to retire for 30 years, you can't afford when you just go into retirement, have another big decline in the market and be sitting there and playing catch up for the next 5 to 7 years. You're not going to catch up.
You know, one of the things you've talked about a lot, too, and this along the lines with this question, part of that strategy that you've described has always been the stop loss. And I'm thinking that for people who are going to rely on that portfolio the way it is to pay out their retirement, that something along the lines of that stop loss, which allows them at least that if stuff goes down, they have a point at which they say, no, I'm not taking any more risk than that, and I'm going to, you know, take that out of the formula.
Well, this is the thing I got to say, and if there's advisors listening to this show, a lot of them might get real mad at me. But if you have an advisor and you ask them, do you have a stop-loss program? Do you have a program that preserves my principal when the market goes south? If they tell you you don't need one because we have you diversified and we're going to ride it out, you know what that really means is? That means they don't have a strategy. That means they have you in different investments. They just want you to leave your money there. Don't ask questions. Just write it down and then write it back up. And I can't remember who said this, but how's that working for you? It doesn't. It kills you. And if you look at your portfolio, and I have a program where I can analyze investments. The other thing I want to point out to you is this. The only guys in my industry that talk about low fees are people who have no performance. If you got an advisor that's talking to you nothing but, let me look at your portfolio. I want to give you the lowest fees. I want to cut your fees down. Well, hey, how about making me some money? I don't really care what fee I got to pay if you can make me some money. I want to make money. That's what my job in my portfolio is. You know, if you hire an advisor to invest your money, their job is to make your portfolio grow, not to give you excuses why you're highly diversified, but the market's down 40% and you just got to ride it out.
You know, that's where the concept of making money versus what did you really net is important. And, if you made your broker more money than he made you, then I guess that's not necessarily a good thing.
Well, you know, Carl, I always think back to when I got my very first job and I was 16 years old, and I'll never forget because my dad was 62. And I remember this so well because my dad, I came home, I was all excited I was going to buy a car because my dad required me to save the money to buy my own car. And I had saved up some money and I had to get a job so I could make the payments. He would sign for me, but I had to make the payments and buy the gas and my insurance. So I got a job making $1 an hour. Many folks listening probably remember these days really well. I was working for a store called Pay and Take It in Vancouver, and I was box boy. Anyway, I come home all excited to my dad, and I said, hey, listen, Dad, I got a job. I'm going to make $1 an hour. I'm going to work 20 hours a week, and I'm going to make $80 a month. And I can, and I had it all penciled out, how much my car payment would be, how much the gas would be, how much my expenses would be. And my dad sat there and looked at me, and he said, son, I'm going to teach you a valuable lesson here. When you go to work and you become part of the working class, you no longer get all your money. You share it with the government. I said, what are you talking about? I'm 16 years old. He said, I'm telling you, when you get that check for $20, it's going to be about $17.50. I said, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you just don't. He said, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a bet. I'll bet you when you get that first check, I'll bet you don't get $20. I said, okay, I'll bet you. He said, okay, let's bet the $20. I said, okay, I'll bet you $20. So 2 weeks later, I got my first check. I come home. I'm walking in the door. I know my dad's going to just unload on me because I walk in the door and my dad's sitting there and he looks at me and he says, okay, smart man, young man that knows everything, how much did you make? And I kind of mumbled it and he said, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I said, oh, it was about $17.80. And he said, hey, what happened to the $20? What happened to the $20 you earned? You worked and you earned. I said, well, I had to pay Social Security, I had to pay taxes. He said, well, welcome to the real world, son. Listen, if I teach you anything about life, you have to know the difference between gross and net. It's not what you think you make, it's what you get to keep that counts. And I was a 16-year-old kid, and I thought, man, my dad was the smartest guy in the world at that point in my life. I thought, you know, this guy, man, I had no concept at all. And that's what I'm saying to you out there as an investor. If you're not looking at net returns, then you're living in a fool's world, just like I was when I was 16, thinking I'm going to make the $20 because I didn't get to keep $20. It's not what you gross. It's what you net. And that is a big, big thing. Well, listen, today we're gonna kind of go into three segments because Kevin is out doing taxes, so I'm going to do a really quick stock report here. But look, if you have a question and if you want to ask a question about what I just talked about, give us a call at 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626, or toll-free 800-990-0750. And, you know, I really mean this, and I tell my clients this, or I tell this to people when they come into my office and talk to me. There is no foolish question when it comes to your money. You need to be asking questions. You need to know, and knowledge is power. And if you don't know, you need to ask, especially if it does pertain to your money. I'm going to give a quick report here, and then we'll take a break, but I want to mention this. The Dow Jones closed at 16,026. It was down 143 points, which is 89 basis points, almost 1%. Now, where do we stand on the Dow when it hit its all-time high before of 14,164 before the crash? Because that's the important part. It doesn't matter how far you came up from the bottom. Is if you were at the top, you have to get back to where you were, and it took us 4.5 years to get back there. So as of right now, from 411 back to 109, the Dow Jones is up 13.15% in 6 years. Now, that's not an average rate, folks, which we're kind of used to of those 8-9% returns. 13.15 in 6 years and 6 months. That's an average of 2.02%. And to that person that emailed me, this is why I talk about this every single week. If you were drawing out 5% of your portfolio and you retired back prior to the crash when things were booming, you not only made 2.02% on your portfolio, you're drawing out another 5. That means you're going negative 3% every single year. How many years can you go 3% negative? Not too many. Now, if we want to get really tight, and I did talk to somebody this week who actually told me, he said, my God, you're explaining exactly what I lived through. I went back to 1999, On 12/31/99, the Dow closed at 11,497. So up until April 11th, 2014, we're talking 13 years and 3 months. That's a long time, folks. The Dow Jones is only up 39.40 or 2.97 per year. Same scenario. Let's call it 3%. I'll give you a benefit of the doubt. But if you're drawing out 5 and you're only making 3, you're going negative 2%. That means your portfolio is down a minimum of 26 to 35%. And you got 30 more years to retire, to live on, 10 more years, 20 more years. I don't know, but it's not a pretty picture. And if we look at the S&P 500, 500 growth stocks in America, the ones that everybody says are really going, S&P 500 closed at 18,015.69. It was down 17.39, down 95 basis points, almost 1%. So where do we stand when we go back to 10,907, when it closed at 15,65? Well, in that 6 years and 6 months, it's up 16.01%. Are 2.46% per year. Folks, you're in deep trouble if you've got a highly diversified portfolio the last 13 years. Because listen to this. The S&P closed on 12/31/99 of 14.69. That means for the 13 years and 3 months, it's up 23.58%. Folks, that's 1.78% return over 13 years and 3 months. I'm telling you, if you're retired and your retirement doesn't have a strategy to offset that or to make sure that you do not get hit in a downturn, what we call a drawdown, when you're drawing down your portfolio and then not only do you have a drawdown, then the portfolio goes down, you got serious trouble. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. If you got a question, give us a call. We're here to answer your questions, 417-7626. Or toll free, 800-990-0750. And we're going to come right back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified on a Saturday morning in Portland, Oregon.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
Let's face it, the rules of retirement have changed. What we were told to do just a few years ago now seems like a pipe dream. Hi, this is Michael Burnett for Chuck Price, owner of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. You know the drill. Be a loyal employee. You'll get a pension. Your home will be worth 10 to 20 times what you paid for it when you retire. So how's that working for you? Call Chuck Price right now. He's located right here in Portland. Featured expert on Investing Simplified on AM 970. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or close to retiring, and he focuses on protection of principal and tax strategies to minimize your taxes. Call right now and get Chuck's retirement report. It's packed full of information on generating more income during retirement, how to leave more to your heirs, and so much more. 503-253-3000. Chuck Price, Price Financial Group Wealth Management, on the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money. Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm. And my practice tends to emphasize probate, estate planning, wills, trusts, and all of those kinds of things. And, of course, a lot of that, as Chuck mentions, depends on what your portfolio is doing. And I never give financial advice, but I certainly become aware of people who don't get it sometimes. And so, you know, be aware, be mindful. We have an email that came in that asks a very cogent question, which I'm going to give kind of a little bit of a vague and ambiguous answer because it's more complex than the time would allow. But basically it says, Carl, we live in Oregon and have $2 million in property and investments in Oregon in a living trust, but have property in Washington that is also worth $2 million. Does the property in Washington affect or our Oregon estate tax? And the answer is sort of. There's a formula that works because, first of all, there are relatively few states that have estate taxes. So kind of Oregon has a formula that basically takes into consideration the other properties, but it takes into consideration all of the property that the person has, both Oregon and Washington. So yes, it does have some effect. And next week, I'll try to give you an example of how much. But we have a caller now.
Janet, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and you got a question?
Yes, I do. Carl, on the 18-month transfer of property on death, when you have that
you mean the transfer on death deed?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
What happens when you die on that? Does it stay in the deceased name for that 18-month period?
No, actually, the property actually, I will say, it vests with the person that you've named as the transferee.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that 18 months is a statutory period during which creditors of the decedent could come back and make a claim, and so that's why there's a problem. And the big problem is, if there were no creditors, then the person is going to keep that property, it's probably not a big problem. But if there were creditors, or if the economic circumstances were such that the beneficiary of that deed, the transferee, needed to sell that property, then the problem they have is that the title companies are typically not willing to insure the title till after the 18 months runs.
Okay, so it goes into the survivor's name, but they just can't sell it for 18 months.
Well, I'm not saying it's totally impossible. I think if you were able to demonstrate to the title company, and I haven't spoken with title company counsel, in fact, we probably should do this, but the last I heard, they were denying the transfers. But that may be only one title company, but I think it's been fairly universal for now. But I think what you could do is, in some circumstances, if it came to me, if somebody came to me and had that problem, I would go to the title company and try to talk to their title counsel and work out some kind of a deal that would insure the title, whether that would be some kind of an indemnification by the transferee or whether it would be some kind of a proof to them that there wasn't any claim out there that was going to be a problem. But it's pretty hard to know about unknown claims. But, you know, depending on who the people are and what their lifestyle was and a whole variety of things, you might be able to do that. So I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just one of those kind of stumbling blocks. So now that same thing does not really exist with respect to a trust. But I suppose there's always the issue of a creditor, an unknown creditor of the trustor coming back and coming after the trustee, who in turn then has to go back and deal with it. That's a problem with estates, no matter whether it's a probate estate or a trust estate or a TOD deed. One of the things that whoever is the managing that estate needs to really consider is doing a real good due diligence as far as locating and identifying any creditors, because it can come back and bite you for a period of time.
Okay, that answers my question. I appreciate it.
Well, great. Thank you.
Excellent question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a very good question.
Yeah.
And it's one that, I don't think the legislature thought all of that through when they did it, but I think it's still a good idea, the TOD deed. It's just the practicality of it is a little less exciting than it might have been at first. But I was going back to this question about the estate taxes, and I think I'll come back next week and give you more of a little sense of how that might work, because there's a formula that essentially Oregon starts with, says your gross estate is all of your property no matter where it is. And then it starts giving credits and exemptions and stuff for inheritance taxes paid elsewhere on property held elsewhere. And so the answer is very complex, but I think it does affect it. But I think In this particular scenario, my rough guess is, without having gone through the formula again, is that it would end up being basically that the property in Washington probably wouldn't really count much towards an additional tax in Oregon, and that $1 million in Oregon would probably be taxed because of the $1 million exemption. So that's my rough guess, but I got to go through the formula to get to it. So anyway, great question, and I'll try to get the answer to that a little bit more thorough next week. So we were doing Carl's comments, and I have one thought that has come up in recent times is that a lot of people, baby boomers like you and I, Chuck, are living longer. But unfortunately, a lot of people live longer but become impaired, and they may require assistance. They may require someone to manage their affairs for them. You can do a lot of planning with powers of attorney and trusts to make sure that the person who's going to be doing it is the person you want. But a lot of people don't. And sometimes, even with those things, depending on the degree of impairment and the nature of the circumstances, it may be necessary to have a professional fiduciary, meaning a guardian or a conservator. Now, you don't have to be a professional conservator, but if you are a professional fiduciary, there are certain requirements in Oregon. And I think, quite frankly, that in many instances, a professional fiduciary is a really good thing, especially if there are warring siblings or people who have been trying to take advantage of this person. That's a good thing. But nobody wants to pay for it. But you know, that's kind of like not wanting to pay for your financial advice. Sometimes it's a good idea. And so anyway, I just thought we'd talk just very briefly about, you know, professional fiduciaries. First of all, Oregon has some very minimum requirements they're not minimum really, but they are requirements for someone being appointed by a court as a professional fiduciary. And we use professional conservators all of the time or deal with them all of the time. It's not at all uncommon to have people use them, or they're appointed by the court. But first of all, the main thing that the Oregon wants is somebody who's certified by the Center of Guardianship Certification. Now, this is like a national organization, kind of various financial advisors and lawyers and stuff have various kinds of certifications that you know are given through, you know, certain kinds of study. So the minimum standards set forth by the Guardianship Certification Center, also called the CGC, is you have to be 21 years old, you have to high school or GED equivalent. You have to have 1 year of relevant experience to being a guardian or conservator, something like working as a social worker or something like that. Or you have to have completed a course of curriculum that's approved by the CGC. Then that's just the absolute minimum standards. Then you have to have be able to have third-party verification of that you've completed the education requirements. You have to submit an affidavit of relevant work experience. You have to have a criminal background check. You have to have no felonies. Well, that makes a good sense, I think. You have to have no civil action that has determined that you've been involved with fraud, misrepresentation, misappropriation, or anything else, theft, including moral turpitude. Moral turpitude, that's the day for the day. That is basically any kind of crime that really involves, fraud or something. Actually, moral turpitude, I guess, could mean almost anything that's really bad. Almost any crime is moral turpitude. But anyway, moral turpitude is a very interesting term. But basically, it's a character kind of background check. You have to also attest that you've never been fired for, you know, basically stealing the cookie jar. So it's kind of one of those things. You have to say that you're either bondable or are bonded. And of course, the bonding company is going to go through the same kind of thing, this kind of looking after you. They're going to do a check on you to make sure that you are capable of being bonded, that you're financially secure or that you're financially, you know, capable. Like I said, one of the things I was talking about trustees, I said, do you really want your, if your child is broke, do you really want that child to be the trustee? And, you know, that's the kind of thing. So if you're totally broke, you're probably not going to be able to be a guardian or conservator. It's just not going to work.
Or if your trustee doesn't have a track record of handling money real well.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing. You know, a lot of times people all, you know, appoint trustees that don't have the skills or the time to do it. So anyway, that's where I think sometimes a professional trustee or a professional fiduciary is very much worth the cost. And, so those are kind of the minimum sorts of things. Then they have to file an application with the CGC, and then they also have to pass an exam. So all of those are, you know, pretty big things. And it's interesting because the Oregon has the Guardian Conservatorship Association of Oregon, which is a, you know, like a trade organization, but it establishes standards of conduct and practice and a whole lot of things, which are way too long to talk about. But what I would point out is that they really make it clear that being a guardian conservator or trustee is a big job, and it involves a whole lot of things, and it needs some skills, and not everybody's equipped to do it. So either by time, temperament, or training. And it's just an interesting thing to consider, especially if you may be needing a guardian or conservator in the near future or someone to manage for you. I know a lady who came in and says, "Look, I've just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, but it's going to, you know, it may progress very quickly, it may not. I know that at some point in time, somebody's going to have to take care of this." And she went to another lawyer, and she talked, and the lawyer said, "Hey, you know, maybe we should consider hiring a professional fiduciary for that purpose, because you know you don't really have any family members that you want this to be done by." And so she's all set up with a trust and all everything so that when things go bad, the professional fiduciary can get appointed by the court and can come in and manage things, and it's all set up. So,
hey, Carl, what does the word fiduciary mean from a legal standpoint?
Well, a fiduciary is a person overall. I think if you want to take a real short definition, it means a person who must act in the best interest of the person they are charged with protecting. I mean, they have to be honest, loyal, truthful, and have no conflict of interest, no self-servingness, no commingling of assets, no borrowing money from them, no stealing money from them. They have to do, and they manage their business not to benefit somebody else, not to benefit their business buddy, but only for the best interest of the person being protected.
Yeah, and I think we all have if you're in any kind of business and you deal with people, I think from a moral standpoint and an ethical standpoint and really a legal standpoint, your fiduciary responsibility should be to your client, number one. If it's to some other entity, I think there's a problem. I think it's got to be to the person you're helping or assisting, or handling their money or being a trustee for. That's got to be the number one priority.
Well, especially if you're doing it as a business. I mean, if you're not serving your clients or customers' best interest, they're pretty soon you're not going to have any clients or customers. But yeah, you're right.
Well, you know, Carl, one of the things that came up this past week with a couple that I was talking to, and one of the things they were concerned about, and actually I referred them over to your office, is they weren't sure they had anybody in their family they really wanted to be the trustee. Now, it wasn't because of money, because of how they handle money. It was more of an ego thing that they felt they would upset one or the other, and they felt by doing it joint, it could cause problems because of their family members. So I recommended them to talk to you about maybe having a local trust-type company that could help them out.
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things, you know, that's a very common problem, that the client wants to have the family involved as far as helping them if necessary, but they want them to be working together. They want them to be co-trustees or co-personal representatives or whatever it is. And sometimes that works just fine, but I will tell you that the courts hate that. Because, especially if they're just two, then just two get to, then if one disagrees with the other, nothing gets done. And it almost always ends up in court if it's an important decision. And then you know what usually ends up happening? One or both of them end up getting fired by the court So, you know, they either fire one and keep the other, or they end up hiring a professional fiduciary. So that's why they don't like them, because it takes up court time that they don't think is necessary.
In the long and the short of it, though, hiring a professional fiduciary is not that expensive when you consider the fact of what they do.
Exactly. And especially when you figure that that it's a big job. I mean, they're required to do, you know, reasonable accounting procedures for the money. They're required to look after the finances and exercise reasonable prudence with respect to investments and things like that. It's a big job. Just the paperwork alone is a big job.
One of the things people totally misunderstand is they think that making somebody their executor or their trustee who's going to take care of things when they're needing help, they think that's kind of a glamorous type thing. And it's really one of the hardest, dirtiest jobs you could do, because you almost never win.
It's a thankless job a lot of times, and it's very, very challenging. And especially if there are family members who are inherently suspicious of the person who is named as the trustee, then it really causes a lot of trouble. And it's the stuff of which lawsuits are made.
So. Yeah. Well, not only that, and I'm just going to speak here from a personal case that you and I was involved in. Unfortunately, there was a very nice lady who was the executor of this person's estate, and this particular person wanted to keep moving from facility to facility and even wanted to move in with other people, which in a lot of cases were not in her best interests.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're you're absolutely right. I remember this well.
Yeah. Oh, I know you do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, for the trustee, but also for you and I, there was a lot of time we spent on that was really not, we did it as a service to the client, who was a client of ours. We certainly didn't get compensated for it, but we did it because we had a fiduciary responsibility to our client. And we wanted to help the trustee as much as we could, because it was a very tough job for her.
Well, and you know, a lot of times this particular client who's now deceased was a very forceful personality, and in fact, little anecdote, the person involved was so forceful that years and years ago, she was in the hospital, and she was real sick, and she needed to have some surgery.
I do remember this.
And she had a trustee, and I get this call from the trustee and says, "Hey, you know, your client is in the hospital. The surgeon's walking up and down the hall. He's waiting for her to give the okay. And she just got back from, a trip, and she got really mad at X, Y, and Z people, and she wants them the heck out of her will, and she's not going to surgery until she gets it done." I said, "You got to be kidding." And he says, "No, I'm not kidding." I says, "Okay." So I took my typewriter and drove out to the hospital and sat down in the chair there. And I knew that. So I typed out this thing and had her sign it. I don't know whether it was, I can't say that I was entirely convinced that she was yes, I was. Now that I think about it, she was absolutely convinced, even in those circumstances, because she made it so clear to everybody that she wasn't doing it until she. And so anyway, we did that, and the surgeon's walking around. And ultimately, though, she had the surgery. She was okay. And then we went back and revised it and said, let's clean this up a little bit. This was a kind of a stopgap measure. So anyway, but the long story is that it's important to have someone who can manage that kind of a situation or other situations with good skills and patience and pretty good thick skin sometimes.
Yeah, and you really want to discuss this with your kids before that happens, that they really want to take on that task, and you really want them to take that on, because it is very stressful.
It does. It can be. It can be very
stressful.
It can
be very stressful. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break here and come back with the Knowledge Trust. If you've got a question, you can call us at 503-417-7626. Or toll-free, 800-990-0750. And don't forget, we're offering that free book with Harry Dent, The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper, The Great Deflation of 2014 to 2019. And it's coming, so give us a call. Thank you very much.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Well, I'd buy you.
If you got $1 million, you better give us a call. You're listening to Investing Simplified. And we just want to make sure that you know you can call and ask a question. This is the time of the show when we kind of talk about everything. Although, we're not going to talk about taxes today because Kevin's not in the studio with us.
Well, Kevin's got all that handled now.
Yeah, so he's got all that handled. We will do our best, but we'll probably defer that definite answer back to him. But you can give us a call at toll-free 800-990-0750. And locally, you can call us at 503-417-7626. And as I mentioned, next Saturday, we're going to have Rodney Johnson, hopefully. I don't know, because I'm going to give a little disclaimer here, because I haven't been in touch with their office because of my schedule and their schedule, and next Saturday is Easter Day weekend. So I'm not sure for sure that, I'm going to have to call and confirm that that's going to work out for all of us. And for him, if not, we'll be here anyhow. But listen, this is a great opportunity. If you go to my website at pfgwm.com, and you can go to my new website called AskTheFinancialDoctor.com, and you can get lots of information there. You can also sign up for Harry Dent's newsletter, free newsletter, Harry Dent and Rodney Johnson, How to Survive and Prosper. And you can get that newsletter at www.harrydent.com as well. And I highly recommend reading that, whether you invest for yourself or you just want to stay informed about what's going on in the economy. It's a very, very good read. It's an easy read. It's not a lot of complicated stuff. And you can also subscribe to numerous other newsletters, and I do. And believe me, there's a lot of stuff that is hard to get through and read. But the Survive and Prosper newsletter, Carl, you get that, and I yes. think you find it pretty simple
Absolutely.
To read.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. It's very informative.
And so I highly recommend it, particularly since free is a good price, you know? One area that I do want to mention before we go any farther, Carl, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do it?
Well, they can call me at 503-255-8795, and our offices are located on 122nd Avenue, just north of Gleason, and we've been there for many, many years, and I'm also at warrenallen.com.
So there you go. And you can reach me at pfgwm.com or askthefinancialdoctor.com. And we're located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103 in Portland, Oregon. And we have two numbers, toll-free 877-50-PRICE, or you can call 503-253-3000. And I don't have Kevin's information here with me. Or I would give that as well, but I know...
Well, Baker Colson's 503-666-5569.
There you go. And it's BakerColson.com, I believe, on the
yes,
web.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely. So. And if you haven't done your taxes, I did talk to some people yesterday who, what feeble little bit I know about taxation, I looked at their tax return and I had recommended them to go see Kevin because it was somewhat confusing and... They were not getting answers, and I told them they need to go talk to Kevin and get some straight answers. They had straight questions. They need to get straight answers. You know, at this time of the show, on the Knowledge Trust, I want to bring up something that's kind of come up. I've gotten calls about and I've heard about, but one of the things I think that is most misrepresented and misused in the financial industry is the use of annuities. And from time to time, I get calls from, you know, Carl, from your clients and Kevin's clients about annuity, or they got an annuity, and what do they do with it? One of the sole reason, I think, to ever buy an annuity, annuities are designed for two things. Number one, to defer income. Number two, to have lifetime income out of them. That's the two reasons. If you compare annuity to an investment contract, which I think is not correct to do, or if you, same thing with life insurance. Life insurance is life insurance. It's for death protection. It's not an investment. And there are so many people out there that give information that life insurance is an investment and that an annuity is an investment. But an annuity is to put your money in an annuity to defer the taxation and to have a guaranteed lifetime income. There is no other investment that I know of. You can't do it at the bank with a CD. You can't do it with an investment portfolio. You can't do it with a mutual fund. You can't do it with a stock or a bond. The only investment I know that gives you lifetime guaranteed income is an annuity. But that's what it's designed to do. And there are so many people who try to sell it as an investment product. And the reality is, I'll be happy to show anybody, and if somebody thinks I'm wrong, please let me know. I'll be glad to debate it with you, because I can tell you from all the numbers I've looked at, the annuities just don't return the returns that a good managed investment portfolio do. And that's the key if you want to call it an investment. Can it compare to a CD? Absolutely, especially in these low interest times. I ran back numbers for the last 13 years, and I can show them to anybody who wants to see them. I do in my presentation in my office all the time. And I'll be glad to prove the numbers. But annuities, over the 13 years, an indexed annuity that has a 5% max benefit, which a lot of them have a certain amount of maximum benefit they can make, 5%. We had in the last 13 years, we've had 8 up and 5 down. 8 up years, 5 down years. The indexed annuity that has a 5% max benefit on the growth of the annuity, that annuity actually returns about 3.5. Now, that is not an investment in my world. Granted, it did, however, outperform the S&P 500, and it did outperform the Dow Jones, because as I gave the numbers earlier, the Dow Jones over the last 13 years and 3 months returned 2.97%. The S&P 500 returned 1.78% per year return, and the index annuity returned about 3.5. So, yeah, now good managed portfolios returned considerably more, a lot more. And that's what I call an investment. And so I just say to you out there, I think annuities are probably misrepresented and misused by far more than any other product in retirement planning. And I really think people need to ask their advisor, is your fiduciary responsibility to me or to the insurance company? Where's your fiduciary responsibility? And I think that's a valid question to ask people.
And I, as I recall you talking on various topics before, there is a place for annuities. That for some people, that's a very appropriate choice.
People that are scared to death of losing any money. I mean, they're just scared to death. They don't want to have any loss. The word investment by itself tells you there's a risk. Anytime you invest, you can lose money. That no question about it. You can lose money. So when you're buying an annuity, that's why an annuity, according to the Supreme Court of the United States, an annuity is not an investment. It's not an investment. It's a guaranteed insurance product that gives you guaranteed lifetime income.
And the interesting thing there is, most insurance companies have been around for a long time and seem to be doing pretty well. But there always is that risk that the insurance company goes belly up.
Yeah, absolutely. And historically, I mean, we tell clients all the time, if you're going to talk about an annuity, the first thing you want to talk to the people offering the annuity is, what is the best rating, the AM Best, which rates all the insurance companies, what is their rating? Is it a high rating? And if it's not a high rating, why isn't it a high rating? I mean, get some facts, ask some questions. Remember, there's no foolish question when it comes to your money. Start asking, Don't just sit there and let the guy sell you the annuity. Ask him some hard questions like, what is the AM Best rating? How's this company rated? How's it compared to the other companies you offer? Why would you offer me this company over another company? Why is this one the better one to have? I mean, ask those questions.
Absolutely.
Carl, I got to tell you, I see on a regular basis people that have bought in some of these long-term contracts that are 10 years. And in one case, I had a lady come in. She was 83 years old. She put $100,000 in an annuity because
wow.
She was afraid she was going to lose money. Mm. And I told her, you're not going to lose money. The problem is you're not going to make a lot of money. And the fact is, odds are you're not going to live to mature that contract. So the benefits are going to go to her kids. Her kids are going to get that money, and they're going to pay ordinary income on any return.
Right.
That's the reality.
On almost all annuities, there's always when the money comes out, there's a tax to deal with.
Yeah, and that's okay, because if you made money and you got to pay taxes on it, we're all going to pay taxes. So, but I just want to point out that one of the most misrepresented things is people sell the annuity as an investment, and I sell it particularly as a income guaranteed income product. And there are people who don't have a pension. They don't have good retirement plans. And those people, the annuity fits right into what they need in their portfolio. They need some guaranteed income. They need something that's going to be there no matter what the market does. Remember we talk about the drawdown? Well, if you have an income annuity and you're getting a set amount of, say, 5 or 6% off that annuity, no matter what, that's never going to run out. You could have drawdown, and you're never going to lose that guaranteed income benefit as long as you're alive. That's a pretty powerful thing. And so I think if the agent sells it properly, which is that way, it's a great product by itself. You don't have to say it's the greatest investment since sliced bread, because it's not. So that's my two bits worth on annuities.
I think that's almost a dollar's worth.
Yeah, I think if people listen to that and take that advice, it could mean hundreds of thousands of dollars difference to you in your portfolio on return.
You know, the thing that always comes to me is that what you and I and Kevin are all about is really planning when it comes to it. And, it's time to do it now. Procrastination hurts everybody, and it makes it difficult, and it makes for bad choices if you wait to the last minute. And it's usually pretty painless. Most of us, I haven't had anybody go screaming out of my office. and I think it's a good idea. I can give you an example of one. Some of you, I mean, I guess most of you who have a doctor are familiar with what we call HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Privacy and Portability Act. And, you know, they have the notices that say this is our privacy policy and all of that stuff. But the bottom line is that under HIPAA, most people can't talk to the doctor about your medical condition, period. And I had a situation the other day where a fella had been involved with a lady, had been essentially what you might call a common law marriage. They lived together for 30 some odd years. And all of a sudden she gets sick and she goes to the hospital and he can't talk to anybody. They said, we're sorry, you're not a relative. You're not her husband. We can't tell you a diddly squat. And we could have fixed that. Had they come in a week earlier, we could have given them, which I would have done as a matter of course, would give them a HIPAA waiver, a HIPAA authorization, maybe an advance directive. And of course, this person doesn't have a will or anything. So, you know, procrastination in this instance caused a lot of grief for this guy.
Yeah, listen, the last thing you want to be remembered for is not that you didn't have proper planning.
Absolutely.
I mean, because I guarantee you, your children, your executors, that is what they'll remember if it's not organized and it is messed up. So spend the time now, plan your estate, plan your future, and your kids and your heirs will be much more happier. And so will you. Thank you very much for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll talk to you next week.